A number of major newspapers across the country have ditched the Dilbert comic strip after cartoonist Scott Adams went on a rant last week calling black people in America a hate group. The comic offers a humorous take on office culture and has been running since 1989. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik has been following this and another important story developing at the New York Times. David, welcome.
Thanks, Peter.
So listen, Scott Adams is no stranger to controversy. 77 newspapers had already dropped Dilbert last year after he introduced a black character who identified as white into the comic strip. But was this latest rant just, I don't know, finally a step too far?
Oh, yeah, I think it was. He, you know, essentially said that white people should get the hell away from black people. Pretty stark language, pretty bluntly racist. Chris Quinn is the editor of The Plain Dealer and of Cleveland.com in the city of Cleveland, Ohio. He called it hateful and racist, and they announced they were dropping it. A number of their sister papers, Advance newspapers, did as well. And then you saw sort of this wave of papers that subscribe just dropping them, saying they want no part of it. This is not free speech. This is not edgy. This is not, you know, just controversial. This is pretty blunt racism.
LA Times, Washington Post, New York Times, Gannett. I mean, all these big papers in this country have all canceled the comic strip. Are there any left that run it?
Scott Adams has said that his distributor has dropped him as well. So those outfits that continue or choose to run him are doing so quite consciously, as opposed to just doing so by default.
Well, as he often does, Elon Musk has inserted himself into this news story. He tweeted support for Adams and agreed that the media is, in fact, racist against white people and Asians. And Musk has often made the case for free speech, even when it's reprehensible. But where are other social media outlets and traditional media drawing the line here?
Nobody's preventing Scott Adams from saying these things or distributing it through social media, in a sense. But, you know, in terms of traditional media, you know, when you pay somebody to for their comic strips or for their commentaries or for their reporting or what have you, you are, in a sense, lending your imprimatur that these are acceptable ways of framing the world. And that's no longer the case for most major news outlets and Scott Adams.
Now, there's another important media story I want to ask you about, and this one is about the New York Times, which is facing criticism for its coverage of transgender people. Tell me about the issue there.
Well, so there was an open letter to editors of the Times that were signed by a small number of Times journalists themselves, but also folks who had over the years contributed some reporting or opinion pieces to the Times. And the number of signers has grown, but their connection to the Times has become more tenuous. That said, they argued that because there had been repeated deep dives into the question of how certain kinds of what is called gender-affirming care for trans youths might affect youths, questions that might still exist about whether or not there are concerns or implications about that kind of care, that the weight of the Times was somehow against trans people and that it was showing bias and a lack of fairness towards trans people that violated the Times's standards.
What's the Times saying about that?
Well, Times editors have come out very much rejecting this. They say that the reporting has shown care and sophistication and that Times journalists and Times journalism cannot be intimidated by effectively what they're characterizing as political statements and pressure from looking unflinchingly at issues, even if they are fraught and difficult. One of the key points is the science settled? You know, the reporting of in a number of instances of the articles that caught the attention of the protesters said the science isn't fully settled as to whether or not this is appropriate to do, particularly for youths, for people who are not fully grown. And those writing in protest have pointed to stuff from American medical groups and researchers saying actually the science is settled on this. It certainly is fair to point out, as Times journalists have, that there are, in some cases, some researchers in Scandinavia, for example, who have been looking at this saying, look, this hasn't been settled long enough, and there are some very ambiguous and conflicting indications here about what's the appropriate way to handle this medically. And so there are reservations on that score. And what you're seeing right now in real time are journalists at the Times trying to work through this issue and others saying not only by what they're reporting, but the very fact of their reporting on this with such attention is in some ways doing an injustice to trans people and trans youths in particular.
We sometimes describe the New York Times as the paper of record. It's the most important paper in the country. Do you think that a story like this has the ability to change the way that the entire industry covers transgender issues?
I think that the Times is influential in whatever it does, and it does cast an incredible shadow and an incredible influence over journalism, over the way in which particularly major institutions and major figures think about things. I think that what the Times would argue is that they are working through these things with care, that they say, listen, even if you think that we need to think of certain questions a bit differently as we're working through these things, you know, we are trying to treat people with respect and with care, even as these are issues that society is working through, and that they say that there's strong indications that scientists and medical professionals are working through as well.
David Folkenflik is NPR's media correspondent. David, thanks as always. Appreciate your time.
You bet.